Hey everyone, this is John, and this is the Nintendo Show, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. We got another After Dark for you this week. No politics this time. This time we start off with quite a bit of basketball and baseball discussion, talk about the movie A Quiet Place, and then talk about some comic books for a little while. So, have fun.
And what's with your Boston Red Sox losing to the fucking Oakland Athletics all the time?
Did they lose again today?
I thought they were trash. They're down 3-2 in the fifth.
Fuck's sake. No, Oakland is a very good hitting team.
Yeah.
They score quite a bit of runs, but their record doesn't reflect. Like, they'll probably end up being over 500 by the end of the year.
Yeah.
But yeah, their pitching isn't necessarily great. Mm-hmm. But it has been annoying to... If they drop a game today against the Athletics and go down like and lose the series to the Athletics, that is an annoyance.
They played the Athletics earlier.
They did. They got swept by the Athletics earlier.
And we were talking, that was when they were riding that crazy high of like 17-2 or whatever. Mm-hmm. And you were like, the next lineup of games should have been an easy setup for them to keep that streak going.
Yeah.
And then apparently the Oakland Athletics are the fucking... And I think they did a series against the Yankees, and I think they beat the Yankees, too.
The first series they played against the Yankees, they won that series 2-1. And then the second series that they played in New York, they lost that series 2-1.
Oh.
So...
That's not bad, though. Those are really, really good odds against the AL East Oakland Athletics.
They did just take two
out of three. Can't beat anybody else, apparently.
Yeah. They did take two out of three against Toronto in Toronto, which is good. That's a series you it's great to win.
Well, that's a divisional. Lineup, yeah. Right? They're a divisional team, right?
Yeah. And they need to take this series against Oakland. Come on, you don't lose a series to the Oakland A's. And then they got Tampa at home after that. And that's another series they should win.
Yeah, again, silver lining. Not only is their record fucking amazing right now, this is still a fucking great record to be posting. If you're winning two out of every three games, that's really, really good.
Their win percentage right now is just under 700%.
Yeah, and both teams, I think, all teams have played roughly 40 games.
Mm-hmm.
And the Red Sox have played like 10 more away games than home games.
Yeah.
They're way behind on home games compared to the Yankees, who are like way ahead in home games. They've already played. They have to go on the road a bunch, and the Sox finally get to come home and like play in Fenway, which probably feels good, you know?
Yeah.
By the way, if you're wondering about it, the Yankees and the Nationals are in a series.
Yes.
And they got suspended. They're both tied 3-3.
Okay. Like a rain delay? Is that...
Just has suspended. So, okay. I don't know. Maybe all of Washington, D.C. collapsed in upon itself.
We can only hope.
The North Koreans finally tagged him with a nuke.
Oh, God. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to Pedroia being back, because that's an extra bit of offense that... You know, isn't, like, sorely needed, but it'll be really great to just have offense.
This is kind of a tangent, but does the MLB really have glue guys? Like, you know, you talk about the NBA or in the NFL, there's always... They're just about glue guys, you know? The veterans that hold the team together, like...
At times.
Ray Lewis, towards the end of his career, was not very good, but he was sort of the beating heart of the team. People always felt like... Andre Iguodala is not... He's, like, the fifth best guy on the Warriors, but people talk about him like he's... their glue guy. He's the one that keeps them all together.
Hmm.
Is Pedroia essentially that for the Red Sox? He's been there for so long.
I don't think anymore. I think now it's Mookie Betts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is good, because Pedroia's not going to be around forever. You need to pass the torch at some point. I think it's going to be... that's true. I think it's going to be interesting to see where he gets put in the lineup, because right now, Alex Cora, the manager, really likes... Mookie Betts hitting leadoff and Andrew Benintendi hitting second. And Pedroia usually hits second. It's going to be really interesting to see if Pedroia ends up down at like 6 or 7. Because I think the
line... traditionally, we're just left at a 5, 6, 7. Because, I mean, I always think of like the slugger goes 4.
3, 4, 5 is where you have like your big power hitters.
Okay.
And then once you get down to like 7, then you have guys who, you know, typically... aren't really great hitters. You have them on the team for other purposes. On a really nicely balanced team, you have good hitters 1 through 9. It doesn't happen a lot, though. And right now, like that's something that the Red Sox expected they would have, is solid hitters 1 through 9, but the catcher position has just been an absolute black hole. None of their catchers are hitting over 200. Mm-hmm. Jackie Bradley Jr. in center field has not hit. He's hitting under 200. which is not good.
He'll come around, though, I think. Or is he just really not that good?
He's a streaky hitter. He's going to have to hit a hell of a streak to, have a productive, an overall productive season. Mm-hmm. He's getting to a point where, if he doesn't establish some sort of hitting consistency, he's going to find himself on the bench. Because what they can do is their backup first baseman is Mitch Moreland. And he hits a lot of extra bases. And he is currently hitting at or around 300. So he's got a good batting average. He's hitting for extra bases. And what they can do is they can put Hanley Ramirez, who typically plays first base, as their designated hitter, and put J.D. Martinez, who's their designated hitter, they can put him in the outfield. And he's not a good outfielder. But at a certain point, the really great defense of Jackie Bradley Jr. stops getting balanced out by terrible offense. And he's been bad. The catching position. And second base hasn't been great either.
I mean, it makes sense. If you're batting, 180, there's no amount of gold gloving you can do that's going to make up for that.
He's lower. He's down to 170. He's been bad. Mm-hmm. And catching
you have to be able to generate some kind of offense.
Yeah.
Well, what is it, though? Last year, he played with the team last year, right? I mean, he's not a new addition to the squad.
Yeah, he last year he had the longest hitting streak in the majors. He had 40 games in a row where he had a hit.
And where's that?
Where indeed?
Does he need to actually go back to the minors just to sort some shit out?
Maybe.
Get ready?
Find himself?
That's what they did with Yasiel Puig.
Yeah,
He was. Everyone thought this was going to be the next big motherfucker out there.
Mm-hmm.
And he had hit a really bad patch, and then he had to go back to the minors, collected himself, and came back to the pros, and now he's serviceable.
Yeah, he hasn't been the same.
More than serviceable. He's good. He's really good.
Yeah, he's a good player. He hasn't been the same on-fire player that he was for that year and a half, and he may never be again, but he's a major leaguer. Mm-hmm. He deserves to be in the major leagues. So
maybe he's just heading right.
Yeah.
Maybe he's doing the nose candy.
Could be.
Riding the lightning, you know?
Anyway,
riding the lightning.
Second base
I've not heard that one.
Ride the rails, dude.
Second base hasn't been great either, but that's Dustin Pedroia. He'll be fine when he's back. But catcher, center field, second base are these positions that have not been productive for them, and it's.
But these are kind of first world problems you're dealing with, right? Mm-hmm. Because your team is great. Your team is really fucking good.
Yeah.
And they've played 60% of their games away.
Mm.
And they're ready for some home games, and they're going to be going up against things like the Orioles, you know?
And that's a series they should win. most series are series they should win at this point. They should not be dropping 2 out of 3 games to the fucking Athletics.
Who would they not be favored? Houston? If they had a homestand against... if they had to go away to Houston, they would probably not be the odds-on favorite to win.
Probably not, but I still feel like they should be in contention for all 3 games.
Or Cleveland. I remember we were rolling for the Rust Belt.
Cleveland's struggling.
We were rolling for the Rust Belt teams, and you were like, oh, all these Rust Belt teams are great. And then, you know, I feel like some of them have certainly dropped off. Where are all of these teams anymore? I mean, obviously,
The AL East is, or sorry, AL Central, which is Minnesota, Cleveland,
Cincinnati. Well, I don't know if they're
Cincinnati's national.
Cincinnati, Milwaukee, 2 Chicago teams.
Yeah, she's the
Kansas City Royals. I mean, that's AL and NL, but
yeah,
that's your Rust Belt shit.
Yeah, the AL Central in particular hasn't been good. I think Cleveland is still leading that division, and they're at 500.
They lost today.
They are below
Detroit.
Ooh, that's ugly. Mm. Detroit is not good.
9-8, by the way. So both teams need to figure out what a pitcher is.
Yeah. Jeez.
I like having the scores in front of me. what do you want to know, man?
I want to know if the Red Sox are still down.
Yeah, it's top of the sixth. It's a very little change. They're top of the sixth. They're down 3-2.
Mm.
Yeah. I don't know.
Okay. Well, anyway. Baseball's not the only sport going on right now.
Yeah, the NBA's happening right now, man.
Yeah.
So, and we're now into the conference finals. I actually have ESPN open right now, and it's kind of live refreshing the game.
Mm-hmm.
But, so the East has been Boston and Cleveland.
Right.
And right now there's 5 minutes to play, and Boston's up 6. Tight game.
Yeah.
But Boston won the first game and crushed the first game.
They sure did, and the sky was falling.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and me too. I was not of the opinion... I thought it was going to be a tight series. I thought maybe this game would go like 6-7 series. But I think ultimately, maybe in my heart of hearts, I thought Cleveland would win this one. I thought LeBron was going to figure something out and make it happen. And because the very first series the Celtics played, they took it took them a 7-game series to get past...
Indiana, was it?
That's the Bucks. It was the Milwaukee Bucks. Okay. Who have Giannis Antetokounmpo, who is just really... he's a lot like LeBron in that he is kind of unstoppable. Hmm. But that's what they did. They let him go crazy and were able to shut down the rest of the team. And they won in a 7-game series, so good for them. And then they went on to take on the 76ers. And the 76ers were sort of like a lot of young and upcoming talented players because of that whole tanking thing that we've talked about before.
Yeah.
They tanked hard and got all these crazy assets. And then low-key, Boston essentially did the same thing. And Boston beat them 4-1 in that series, just crushed them. And again, keep in mind, Boston is missing two of their three best players. They are out injured right now. Two all-stars with Gordon Hayward and Kyrie Irving. So they are essentially playing with a bunch of 20-year-old, like, highly touted prospects. But their team is basically just, like, Al Horford, who is, fucking amazing. And then these other guys that are just sort of, like, haven't quite found their legs yet. They bring it up all the time now where it's, like, LeBron has been in more playoff games than the entire Celtics roster combined.
That's
right?
Funny.
Like, this team is just so young and so inexperienced. But they play with heart. They play with hustle. They are so physical. And, you just wouldn't want to play them. They out-mean and out-muscle everybody. And it's great to watch. They are very Boston. And
LeBron didn't want to play them that first game. He didn't want to play.
No, that's true. I mean, they lost by like 25-ish points, something like that. And that was just because... I believe they said that was the worst plus-minus. You know, like the time on the court. As a plus-minus metric.
Yeah.
It was his worst plus-minus ever at, like, minus 32.
Hmm.
We're terrible. Minus 32. That means you basically just stepped on the court and then a, like, barrage of buckets behind you, like, happened. It's got to be a bad feeling when you're, like, a minus 32. That's like the horse that always has to lose the race to make the other horse feel better.
You know? Yeah. I've been seeing a lot of basketball videos now that these conferences finals have started.
Oh, yeah?
Because
what are you watching?
Like a couple weeks ago, or maybe it was just a week ago, there was a video suggested to me by YouTube, and it was Shaq and Charles Barkley going at it.
That was awkward, man.
About like babying characters, and it was so funny because like they were like really mad at each other, and Shaq just eventually like. Just rubbing in Barkley's face about how he never won a championship.
That's right. That's good.
That's got to be such a sore subject.
Was this like on air? Because
they're
on the panel thing, right?
Oh yeah, this was on the air. They're airing it out for everybody to see.
So that lineup also, because it's four dudes usually. And
yeah.
It's Kenny the Jet Smith and Ernie, and Ernie is sort of like the moderator. He's the voice of reason and the guy that, for whatever reason, I don't know what he does to them off set, but both of them have his respect.
Mm.
Or right, like he has their respect or whatever. But
yeah,
they don't fuck with each other when he's around. And he was not there that game. And they had some other guy in there.
They had Ernie from Sesame Street.
Yes. Some other dude was in there, kind of basically being the moderator. And he didn't know how to stop them from doing that.
Mm.
And they both just kind of kept needling to the point where it went from being like their usual kind of joking and prodding to like kind of getting serious.
Yeah.
Getting serious where Shaq's like, I'm a big dude. And then like constantly brings up that Charles Barkley is really not that tall. It's a weird thing to bring up. He's actually
he's
like
only
6'4".
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
he's only 6'4".
That's true. That's a big man.
I imagine the average height of a guard in the NBA now is probably 6'5".
Yeah.
Like players have just gotten bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Players are huge. But at any rate, like, he didn't stop them from arguing. They got vicious about it. In the last few episodes I've seen, the two of them, it was one of those weird, like, you ever, like, be around people where two friends get into, like, a really fucking knockdown, drag-out fight, and you're like, oh my god, but then, like, minutes later they're over it? Like, they just wanted to get something out of their system and they're fine.
Yeah. I mean, they're professional competitors. I imagine they're
they're super competitive with one another. I think that's what it amounts to. And they clearly got over it that day. Like, they didn't, this fight, maybe they're digging up old wounds or whatever, but I think they moved past it, because everything I've seen with them since, they're now joking with each other like they're going to start the fight again, just to watch, like, Kenny be like, oh, that's the best part, you saw Kenny, he's just like, oh my god. He's like, eventually he's just
like, what's nothing to do with it? And eventually he had to chime in and sort of be the monitor, was like, well, I think you're right about this, and I think you're right about this.
The best, the reaction. Please don't eat me. Do you remember Mike Myers' face when Kanye West said that, George Bush doesn't care about black people?
No.
Like, it's that, there's this really hilarious speech where he's like, George Bush doesn't care about black people, and then you see just, like, Mike Myers, who was just, thought he was doing this, like, fluffy promo piece with him, just, mm-hmm. like, his eyes just, like, light up like fucking pinball machines. He's just like, oh my god, I'm a Canadian, they're gonna fucking deport me. You know, it's this great reaction. You see with Kenny is, like, alarmed that nobody's stopping this.
And right.
Kind of, probably elbowing the guy to be like, fucking say something.
Why is, like, no producer in anyone's earpiece, like, slow it down, slow your roll.
Bingo. Like, we gotta cut to commercial or something. Because I'm sure that's where their big fear was. They would literally
Bring on the people from Fox and Friends. Like, well, you guys are probably really busy.
Oh, the Rockettes would have to come out to, like, find a way to, like, get them out of this scene. No, but they don't give a fuck. They love arguing with each other.
It was such a fun video, and, like, that led me to, like watching, like, all these other, like, sports talking heads people are like, well, who was right, and who won the argument? Which is such a fucking bullshit conversation, but it was so much fun, because, like, I'm never gonna fight.
The harshest thing I ever heard any one of them say was actually from Charles Barkley, directed at Shaq, where he was like, I don't remember, I'm going to paraphrase it, but his punchline was essentially like,
at least I can make a free throw.
You're going to watch them erect the statues of the guys you played with at Miami
LA,
and it's not going to be
shit.
You.
Yeah.
You're going to see them put a Dwayne Wade statue up, and you're going to see them put a Kobe statue up, and you're not going to have one in Boston, and Phoenix is not putting one up for you.
Shaq, we'll put up a statue here in Orlando. We'll do it.
Shit, we should. Why are we so bad? Oh my god. We're drafting sixth, by the way, if you wanted to know, in the lottery. We pulled sixth Shaq. In the lottery tonight.
We'll do it. We were so mad at him for leaving. Like, no, I fucking love Shaq.
Can we just do, like, a monstrosity being of, like, him and Penny and Dwight Howard and, like, all of the great players that left us and sort of, like, got injured? It's like, who else? Oh, Tracy McGrady. We need to have, like, one limb from all of them on one statue, and it's just like, we're sorry.
That'd be great. So actually, one thing that Shaq said that I really respected was, then they were talking about, like, there's, I guess, the Toronto Raptors player who his coach had benched him for...
Oh, DeMar DeRozan got benched, yeah.
Whatever. But, like,
by Dwayne Casey, who got fired and is the coach of the year.
Jeez, yeah, God, what a fucking tangled web.
I know.
Anyway, but Shaq doesn't look really respected. Like, when he was out on the court and people would implement the hack-a-shack strategy, yeah. Like, his coaches expect him, like, you keep playing, you get up there, and you make your free throws. Like, they didn't care how bad he was at free throws. They expected him to make them, and he didn't, like, just half-ass it. He went up there trying to make free throws. Bad at it.
He made a comment, though, where he said, I make them when they count. And people were like, oh, that's funny that you say that. But then a few stat gurus broke it down, and they were like, you know what? During when it counted, being, like, the last 20 games of the season and the postseason, his free throw percentage improves by about 15%.
Hmm.
So he is, in some way, able to at least go from, like, 60 to 75, which is... enough to keep you on the court. Like, no reason you're not going to be pulled for that, especially when you are Shaquille O'Neal,
mm-hmm.
and you're a human bowling ball that can just dunk on anything.
Right.
Like, you are so physically demanding of the other team that you can have a sub. Hey, LeBron. LeBron is actually historically not a great free throw shooter, but he is also a good clutch free throw shooter. Like, he historically shoots, I want to say, in, like, mid-70s, which is pretty bad. A good free throw shooter shoots about high 80s. The best in the NBA shoot in the low 90s. So, like, Steph Curry, who bricked one last night, by the way, in a win, but he bricked the free throw, which kind of...
Hey, it can happen to anybody.
It can, yeah.
Nick Anderson totally. Did it four times.
You know, it's the equivalent of a pitcher getting a hit. Right?
unless you're Ohtani, which just happens.
Which you're just that talented an athlete. But yeah, you expect your average... pitcher in the NL to bat, like, what, 120?
That'd be great. Great production, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Like, there are some really, really, yeah, it's the opposite of that. Like, you know, some of these guys are just so into it and so ingrained in the free throw.
Yeah.
They get it. They're really good. Some big guys are good at free throws. There's really nothing that says you can or can't be a good free throw shooter. But, yeah, and again, Shaq will bring it up all the time. He actually is very human about that, where he says, like, you know, I left, like, 10,000 career points by bricking free throws. Like, I could have had 10,000 more points because I missed that many fucking free throws.
Oh, no, there goes his Hall of Fame ticket.
Yeah, you know, but hey, at least he gets that he should have been good at that.
Yeah, it's true. Very self-reflexive. Yeah.
And by the way, there's 2 minutes to play, and it's 103-89 Boston. So Boston is looking like they're cruising into another easy win.
So, anyway, like, we started this conversation. Like, it led me into, like, these other basketball videos, and one of the things that has caught my eye recently is, especially after the game one loss, and I imagine after this what looks to be a game two loss,
there
have been a lot of conversations firing up again about greatest of all time. Is it LeBron? Is it Jordan?
I think, and I don't know if we talked about this, but I this is how I personally feel in my heart of hearts, is that the NFL has a good parallel where Tom Brady has all of the Super Bowls you could ever want. He is the clutch guy that's going to, like, who do you want? And when it's like, you know, you need 6 points in a football game, and, you know, you got 2 minute drive to make it happen. Who do you want with the taking snaps? And you're like, you want Tom Brady. But it's like, who's the greatest career? Who's the numbers guy? And you say Peyton Manning.
Hmm.
And I think that's kind of how, especially, like, I mean, I think when you think about LeBron, you're going to think about, he's maybe the best pure basketball player, maybe the best athlete that's ever played basketball. Yeah, you know, the quote-unquote LeBron stat line is 27-7-7, which just tells you he thoroughly dominates every aspect of the game. Getting that many points consistently, 7 rebounds and 7 assists, it means he's playing the perfect point forward. You know, this sort of dream, magical guy who can fulfill roles 1 through 4 on a team, you know? And he's just, his career longevity is unbelievable. He's playing the best basketball of his life currently, which I feel like we keep saying every single year. I expect him to be better next year. Isn't that fucked up? He's going to be like 34, 35, like, which is very, very old for a basketball player. You know, he came out in the same draft. I'm trying to remember the names that he came out with. But basically, everybody, and there's some amazing, like Carmelo Anthony, whose career is practically over. I think people are already, like, just saying he's done. Dwayne Wade, whose body broke down, came up with all these other really, really talented players. And he's not only, like, people are saying that this is now, like, the perfect time frame for him because of his one conditioning, his physical strength, and he has the best basketball IQ you could ever imagine. Like, it really is unbelievable. But Jordan is a killer. Jordan fucked his mom, you know? Like, Jordan is still better. Jordan didn't physically fuck his mom.
He's just, off.
But he is his dad. He is, like, the fucking guy.
Allegedly. Yeah.
You know, get like, you know, 4 more titles and we'll talk, I guess. But he's always going to be Peyton Manning. He'll be that prototypical dream athlete you want. He'll be a fucking monstar from, you know, Space Jam or whatever. But who's going to put the dagger in you? It's fucking Jordan. Jordan's the best.
And there's no
getting around that.
And that we've had this conversation a couple of times where, like, I think we talked about it last few months ago when the Cavaliers were going through this slump that they were in, and they lost so many games in a row or something.
Yeah, they blew up the team.
And the conversation we had was, like, Michael Jordan wouldn't have let that happen. The guy had such a competitive fire that he would not have let them go down 2-0 as it seems they're going to against the Celtics.
Yeah, well, you know, Jordan played as hard in practice as he did in the games.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like these guys don't even fucking practice.
Mm.
That's a big deal. That's team basketball, too. I think that's the other thing you're going to see. In the grand scheme of, like, where basketball is going, if you really, really can step back and take a look at it from a very, very far angle, what you're going to see is that the old style of the big centers, pick and roll, ISO basketball is going to be old stuff. Nobody's going to do it anymore. And now it's going to be replaced by, in the same way that you're seeing batting change in baseball, and in the same way that pitchers don't pitch the way that they used to, and Nolan Ryan stats will never, no one will ever produce Nolan Ryan stats, because no one will ever play that way ever again. You know, all of that is changing, and now it is team-oriented basketball. And again, that's why the Boston Celtics are so good, because they're all 6'6 meaty dudes. And that's why the Golden State Warriors are so good, because they just play team defense. They switch nonstop. They never not switch. Somebody brought that up. Like, switch on defense, meaning like someone sets up a screen and you, if you're the person guarding the guy that's running around a screen, it's like, means now you got to deal with the fucking screen. It sucks.
Yeah.
What they do is they switch. So the guy that gave the screen gets a new person guarding him, and the guy that was guarding the screener now moves to the ball. And the Golden State Warriors have turned this into an art form. Like, they just are so good at it, and I bet you everybody else in the NBA this offseason is going to be like, okay, this is the new face of the NBA. Mm. This is what we're doing. There's never going to be another Allen Iverson. There's never going to be another fucking Kobe Bryant. Or maybe there will be talented players. Like, Harden put up 40. Harden is that ISO baller. He is that ISO street baller that you love. And he put up 41 points in an overwhelming loss. Like, if he put up 60 points, it would have been a tight game. And they would have lost. You know? You just can't do it anymore. This is the new face of the NBA. And I don't want to sound hyperbolic. We're literally watching game 2 of the Eastern Conference Finals. And it's a home game. And the Celtics should win this. But they play team basketball. And they just stop. They're so physical and fun to watch. Like, if it ends up being Golden State Warriors in Boston, I couldn't be happier. The only way I could be happier is if the Orlando Magic were somehow in it and they're not showing up to this.
Yeah, maybe one day.
Because, my God, I love watching the Warriors play. I know people shit on the Warriors as being this dream team or whatever. And, like, they're taking pay cuts to win. But
isn't that...
Yeah, they've built this pedigree of success.
I understand, like, why a players' union wouldn't want that to happen, because if people take pay cuts, that lowers the average pay and trying to get players maximum money that you can, but that's why players' unions love big contracts, because it raises the average for everybody, which raises everybody's pay when free agency comes around. But, like, shouldn't people respect that out of athletes? Like, they care more about winning at the thing they really like than making the most money possible?
That's precisely Klay Thompson's point. So Klay Thompson is probably the best two-way two-guard, meaning defense, offense. He's very, very good at both ends. And he's actually thinking about taking a substantial pay cut. And the thing is that you can't sustain a team like the Warriors for that long while getting everyone paid.
Sure.
You know, you simply don't have the cap space, and you pay a repeater tax every time you go into the salary cap. And Klay Thompson has basically said, I'm willing to work out a team-friendly deal to get us just enough under the cap 1 year if you pay me pretty well the next year. Mm. And even then, I'll still shave off $50 million I'm due on a 4-year deal. Because he could demand a max contract from just about any other team. Like, the Orlando Magic would be thrilled to offer him a max contract. Mm. And he would be like, no, thank you.
And he said, I would like to keep winning.
Precisely. He said, I'm already... He's the son of another athlete. He's the son of another NBA player that had 2 titles. Mm-hmm. Like, his dad is worth $100 million from when he was burst out of the womb. Like, he came into a $100 million family. So money means nothing to this guy. Or, you know, he doesn't care about these contracts, right? He's got his own endorsements. And he basically says, they pay me really well already. I'm not worried about money. They pay me well enough. Like, I live in a town that I absolutely love. He lives in Southern California. Like, I'm sure it's all palm trees and sunshine and shit. You know, it's like, he says, I am on a championship team that, you know, I love, and we play so well together. Why would I leave this? Mm-hmm. Give me a reason to leave this, and don't tell me $50 million.
And I'm sure he is still trying to spend all the money he made in college.
He's made $200 million. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's got all that college money he's rolling in, you know? No, but to his point, he's like, people are going to remember me historically as one of the greatest NBA players ever, and I don't know how many rings I'm going to collect over my life.
Like,
if we could just keep this nucleus together, and I don't want to be the one that demands that max contracts and breaks it all up.
Like, how many rings did Shaq win?
4.
We keep on coming back to Shaq.
A trio with Kobe, and then one with Dwayne Wade.
In Miami. How much money did he leave Orlando for? That was a knife in the back. Yeah. He took all this money to go to LA. We don't remember. Mm. We know exactly how many rings he has.
Yeah, bingo. That's a good point. Yeah, it's really about, and again, I think of what you're saying, a lot of the guys on the Warriors are just competitors and they want to win. And they see that, yeah, they can make more money elsewhere, but it means that they got to start from scratch and build a team and do all of this shit where it's like, they already have this chemistry, and you just see it on the court every time they take the court. It's beautiful to watch. Again, some of the most elegant basketball you've ever seen comes from the Warriors. And if it ends up being Boston and Golden State in the finals, I'm still going to... I can't say anything other than that. You know, of course, Golden State's going to sweep them. But not before Draymond and somebody get into a beatdown fight.
That's going to be fun.
The Boston Celtics do not take losing well. They fight hard. Mm. And it's great. I love watching both these teams play, so...
No, I sort of talking about these basketball videos. This is a way to get to this roundabout.
Oh yeah, go ahead. Where are we heading with this?
I saw a statistic, and of course I fucking love the statistic. Yeah. But it's basically a basketball equivalent of the baseball wins above replacement. Mm-hmm. It's a statistic that compiles.
What would player efficiency rating?
I don't think that's
a common metric you hear, but it's not like.
But what it was like an aggregate metric where it takes all these other metrics and calculates how many wins this player got you during the course of a year, and then they would compare. This is how many wins the team got, and of those wins, this is how many this player got you, which I thought was a really fascinating metric.
Who's good? Who is like?
It was part of like the comparison of LeBron and Jordan, and like in LeBron's third like. Age 33 season, he was worth this many wins. In Jordan's age 33 season, he was worth this many wins, and it was like 50% more. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that kind of thing, it is, you know, and I understand, like, the conversation is a conversation that a lot of people like talking about. I like talking about it. They are playing in different eras.
Yeah. So you want to look at LeBron's stat line tonight. I mean, since I got the numbers right in front of me, he put up, and his whole team put up 94 points. He put up 42 points. So that's about 40-ish percent of the points, right?
Yeah.
Coupled with the fact that he has 12 assists, meaning another, let's not even count threes, another just baseline 24 points on his passing. That's 66, two-thirds of their offense. 66, more than two-thirds, 70% of their offense came from LeBron James this game. Yeah, he was 16 for 29, which is... slightly above 50, which is fine. That's what you want to shoot, unless you're playing the Warriors. You know, in a normal NBA game, it's 107-94. Celtics win.
So they scored 94 points. He was good for about 70 of those.
Yeah, 70% of their points.
And they lost.
Yeah, they're in serious trouble. If you want to know where the trouble's coming from, George Hill, 1 for 4. God, who is it? J.R. Smith went 0 for 7. He did not make a single bucket. That's pathetic. And J.R. Smith is like a guy that I personally like. I followed him in the NBA. He's an old school veteran dude. He's really fun to watch, but he's so streaky that he's the Jackie Bradley Jr. And he went 0 for 4 with 3 strikeouts.
Jeez.
You know, so bad.
All right.
Yeah, no, just a terrible performance. And like, yeah, they're letting LeBron go off. LeBron's doing his thing for sure. He's got a triple double with 42 points. Okay, yikes. But nobody else really stepped up. Mm. I mean, Kevin Love has a really impressive looking stat line here. He made 50% of his shots on 9 of 18 shooting with 15 rebounds. Very, very big. That's like old school Kevin Love when he was fat. People love fat. People, meaning like their NBA subreddit, loves the idea of a fat Kevin Love again, because he used to be really kind of big.
The people like just sending him gift packs, get some donuts and stuff.
Oh, totally.
Because is there a concerted effort to make Kevin fat again?
Because he was in his career before he went to join this super team that no longer has Kyrie Irving and is now him and LeBron. At any rate, he averaged usually around 20 and 20. Which is crazy. That's like Shaq numbers.
Yeah.
He was sort of like a big, goofy white Shaq. If you just simply break down the numbers. Who could shoot a three? And then his game has transitioned, now that he's getting older, into more of a spread-oriented three-point shooter that gets a lot of rebounds.
Mm.
So, I admit, I've been rambling here.
Anyway. Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Enough sports. Wes. A Quiet Place.
Hi.
Oh, hey. Sorry, I know we've been...
Wes is here.
I'm here, guys. I'm sorry. I don't really ever have anything to add to sports.
That's okay.
I don't really watch them.
I fumble my way through NBA talk.
So, Brian, you and I have seen A Quiet Place.
Yes.
Which is wonderful.
I thought it was amazing.
I thought it was a fantastic film. More thriller oriented than just straight up horror, I thought.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it's just a little bit more.
I think it depends on how horror movies are defined now. Like, I assume you mean it's not gory. It's not gruesome.
No, it's got a few moments of genuine violence. I think that they shield you from the worst parts of it, which would. I think you would agree.
Yeah, they definitely
are. We can establish we're spoiling the shit out of this.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, we're. All right, here on out, spoil the shit out of it.
And you've probably seen the trailer even. And in the trailer, you know that this one kid gets cut down.
Mm. Well, not in the trailer, they didn't show that.
They cut before the scene in which you see it get run over.
Yeah, I didn't even know the third kid
until
going into the movie. Like, I was even wondering. I was like, who the fuck is this kid?
Yeah. So, I mean, and they could have... I mean, in theory, I guess they could have shown us some very, very violent stuff involving the death of this child.
Mm-hmm.
And thankfully, the worst... Well, I don't know if this is actually thankfully now that I think about it, but what they do show you is the reaction of the parents.
Which is rough.
Which is very brutal to see. Not, I mean, maybe the gore would have made you feel a little better about it than actually watching the suffering on the two actors' faces.
I have a friend of mine that I went and saw it with, a coworker.
Yeah.
I saw it with a couple of them, and that part where the kid, you know, turned on the little spaceship and started making noise.
You want to like
dumbass
scream,
kid?
Don't do it.
You're like, what the hell, kid?
Yeah.
God, you're dumb. That's natural selection right there at work.
But then how do you explain to a 3-year-old or whatever, or a 4-year-old, or however old that kid is, that it's like,
hey, monsters are gonna get you if you make a sound. Like, I mean,
this thing that you do all the time, that
they're doing all this stuff to be quiet, all of a sudden it just turns it on, right? I don't know. Yeah. But the kid gets cut down by the alien, and you know, it's dead quiet, and my coworker off to the side, she's a fucking monster because she just starts laughing.
Yeah.
Like, you're a psychopath. Like, I thought she was crying at first. I look over and the person sitting between us is like, she's laughing. I'm like, what the fuck?
I mean, I can get that. It is kind of a setup.
It takes you out for a second. You're like, okay, they're just going to kill a kid off like instantly. Holy cow.
To establish that there's stakes.
Yep.
You know? I mean, and, all right, so, I mean, that's the setup. Do you know much about A Quiet Place? Have you heard much about the movie? So,
yeah.
You know, it's,
it can't
it's
make
like,
a sound because these creatures...
Society has devolved. We are technically in the post-apocalypse, I think.
Pretty much.
Whatever reason, these creatures have just overrun the Earth.
They're just too... I mean, even not even that overrun, though, because they have it on, like, on the board in his office. It's like 3 confirmed.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's only like 3 in the fucking area. That's it. There's just 3 of these things, and it's decimated the entire... miles.
Yeah.
Just because of how fast they are and how freaking deadly they are.
And they, of course, are blind and only operate off of sound. So it's, you cannot make a noise. It seems like sign language becomes the universal means of communication.
Yep.
Everyone seems to pick up sign language. And they live this whole entire life, in which involves them like going out and exploring and finding stuff, in which that, you know, they trip and fall and, you know, clang some pans together and they're dead. Which has to be kind of a terrifying way to live your life.
I mean, they have trails of sand everywhere.
Just to soften the steps.
Mm-hmm. Just so they don't make sounds. They all walk in shoes because the shoes are going to make sound on things. So
and
they just have like roads of sand that they travel on.
So they lose a kid.
Yep.
And then John Krasinski, with all of his mind power, decides,
and that beautiful beard.
Let me squirt another baby into my wife.
Yes.
Let me just do that.
So stupid.
Yeah, so the movie picks up about a year down the road.
Yeah, it's like
she is now pregnant again.
Oh boy.
What was I forget what the it's like day 30 or something like that. It was like really freaking early in this.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden it skips to like day 472 or something like that. So it goes down the ways.
Yeah. So, I mean, the worst case scenario ever, you have 2 children already.
You have 2 children and you want to bring a baby into a world where you need to be quiet.
But babies don't stay quiet.
No.
Yeah, exactly.
They have
don't.
One method of telling you I'm hungry.
Yeah, and it involves sound.
Yeah, it sure does.
And they even build this like underground like soundproof thing, which of course, for all of their great planning, does not get used because when does her water break?
when the two of them are out collecting fish. The father and son go out getting food for fish and everything. And her wire breaks.
And I hate to be like the, like, why, it's like, oh, why did this have to happen this way? And it's like, well, I mean, because I get it, because they're trying to tell us, they're trying to tell us a story. Yeah. It's trying to be a movie. Things like this, you kind of just have to take for granted. Mm-hmm. Gosh, that couldn't have happened any worse for them. No. If only she had gone into labor, like, with the two of them around, then she could have, like, been put into her thing safely. They even had this whole setup to make the baby, allow the baby to breathe. It's like a little baby coffin, but, like, It's an incubator. That sounds terrible.
It's an incubator.
Is essentially what it is. It feeds the thing oxygen and like it can survive there and all that. Mm-hmm. For apparently the next like 3 years until they can be like, no, you don't make a noise, kid.
Hey, stay quiet.
Yeah.
Which the whole thing was intense. Like the second the wire breaks until when Krasinski gets back, it's incredibly just intense because she's wandering around. Mm-hmm. The house. She makes a sound because I forget why she starts going downstairs again.
Laundry or something, was it?
No, her laundry like tears up a nail on the board, and she has to go back down after her wire breaks. I forget why.
Yeah.
But she steps on a nail and creates this sound.
Oh man, yeah, that's bad.
And I mean, from there on out, it's just intense. She's in the bathtub giving birth. There's blood fucking everywhere. It's just brutal.
That was the one of the jump scares that got me too.
Yeah,
is when he comes back in there and he's like, "Oh no, my wife is missing and dead."
And the bloody hand on like the shower door.
It's like, okay. And by the way, like she gave birth like you know. This is gonna be a really obscure reference, but I remember watching a documentary about Gandhi, and he was given birth by his mom like hanging onto a tree branch and just blasting him out. Okay. So I'm like, this was a really efficient birth on her part, in which she literally only lets out one scream, and it's like, I thought labor lasted for like hours and hours and hours
again,
and she's again. Just like, no, I got this
done. And she waits until fucking the one they get back and they have like this light code that it's red, so they're like, oh no, we're gonna die. Yeah. And so he like turns to the sun and he goes rockets, so you're supposed to go off and set up some fireworks that they have pre-set up to draw noise and draw them away.
Yeah.
And she like toughs out labor, a nail going into the foot, climbing throughout the entire house by herself trying to avoid these monsters, and still holds off making this giant scream until fireworks go off.
Yeah, just she's a real toughie.
Like you're really, got it.
She does it. Good lord.
By walking into the theater, and this is a big spoiler.
How many people were in your theater, by the way?
We walked in, and it was just this one old dude.
Tell me you sat down right in front of him. You sat down right in front of the only other guy.
I was really tempted to.
Oh, that would have been so good.
He was kind of like low in the middle, which was just a bad spot to pick. Like, you have the entire theater, and you pick like right under the screen. What's wrong with you, dude?
Side topic. When I went to see Infinity War... Mm-hmm. It was just after opening weekend, so it was still pretty full. And of course, like the entire like front four rows were completely empty. And there were people who would walk into the theater, see that only the front four rows were empty, and walk straight back out.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a...
Goddamn.
Just get rid of those rows. They are pointless. Sure, yeah.
I think actually Regal's been pretty good about it. I think there are still a few dead seats that I wish they didn't have, but I think even if you're in the second row or the first row, since the seats recline back in such a way, you kind of still have a pretty good view. It's if anything, you're just surrounded by the image. It might as well be your own personal IMAX.
Well, when... Me and my buddy Hector went to see Batman, The Killing Joke, when that was in a limited release. And
which was meh.
It was fine. It was good.
It was alright.
Yeah, I mean, better than a lot of the other DC shit.
Yeah.
Anyway.
There's a Batman Samurai movie.
Batman Ninja.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually have it. I have the Netflix disc right now.
God.
What?
He goes, yeah, break it down. Netflix still has discs. Netflix still rents DVDs. Mm. Anyway. But we were actually like in the third or fourth row. We were real up close. And it's like watching tennis because you have to like physically move your neck to observe everything that's happening.
What theater was this? Hang on.
We were at the CityWalk AMC over at work.
The two theaters I go to a lot now are the AMC Altamont. Get ready for some hardcore Orlando cinema.
Yep, me and Dez, that's the one me and Dez go to most often, I think, some movies.
That one, and I go to the Regal in Winter Park.
Yep.
And the Regal in Winter Park, I think, is actually the best. Mm-hmm. Because, again, Think about like how bad it used to be like 20 or 15 years ago, say, when you were going to see a movie and it was just like literally like auditorium jam-packed seating where it's like very little space. You have you are expected to share armrests like it's a airplane or something. And like they just load the rows up, no reclining seats. And then nowadays, I feel like every theater totally upped their game just to get business. Because, like...
Yeah, assigned seating.
Assigned seating.
Full recline.
Reclining.
Yeah.
Cup holders.
It's tray
so
tables.
Spacious. Tray yep. tables. Like, it's a fantastic experience, I think.
Yeah, I really like going to that reel.
So, and again, then that's the point. It's just that, like, even if you were... If you were stuck in the corners of the first row, you would probably think, okay, this is kind of a bad view. Even the first row, again, I would think it's just a super immersive experience. I wouldn't be like, oh my god, I have the worst angle in the world. I would just be like, it's overpowering how big the screen is on top
of me. Because you can recline now, you don't get that neck strain.
Exactly. You would get this up like this, you just are naturally like comatose, just experiencing
like you're at like a laser light show or a planetarium.
Exactly. You know, so, and again, if you're just in any other seat in the house, you've got a great view. So...
Actually, one more, before we get back to A Quiet Place, one other thing about Killing Joke. Because just before like the feature, and it was only like a 80-minute little movie, and right before there was like a 5-minute interview with Mark Hamill, who does the voice of Joker and all the animated Batman stuff. It was a really interesting interview, like how he came by getting the part, how they originally wanted him for Batman, how he wanted to do Joker but didn't know if he could do Joker because like what are people gonna think if Luke Skywalker is the villain, like this sort of decision making process he went through, and some fucking jackass was just real disrespectful and like in the middle of the interview just shouted out, just play the goddamn movie. Like, motherfucker, this is actually interesting
shut
stuff.
Fuck up, dude.
Yeah, just fucking shut up. Don't talk. Like, nobody talking in the theater.
I feel like if you're going to see it too, you're like into that part of it.
Right.
It's like you know who Kevin Conroy is.
You know that
he does
Mark
sound
Hamill
like
is.
Batman yeah. more than anybody else.
Yeah.
It's like,
Anyway, A Quiet Place.
A Quiet Place.
Yeah.
So we're walking into the theater, and I jokingly go say one of my predictions of the movie. I'm like, I bet you anything, John Krasinski dies at one point as a means to save his children. And
save
sure,
that.
Fuck enough. Just
yeah.
So he's the one who gets the food.
Yeah.
Now what?
But he also does so conveniently, just after the scene in which he passes on everything he's learned to his child, the male child of the two.
This is how you please your mother.
In the same way that
Oh my god. That's not cool.
That's bad.
What?
That's not cool.
Continue.
In the same way that I'm sure that the wife is going to tell to the daughter, it's like, this is the thing that makes babies. Just don't let the boy squirt in it.
Nope. Don't do that. Like, although, I'm pretty sure all of them are dead at this point.
Of course, you have to do that all in sign language.
Yeah. No, it's just like, none of that. None of that, children. Yeah. It's again, there's a lot of... schlocky plot stuff, I think, happens, quite frankly. I think this
but
is kind of a cheesy movie in some
it's
ways.
It's cheesy, but at the same time, like, it's done so well that those cheesy things aren't bad. They belong in it.
I agree.
Like, at that part where Krasinski is... The alien is on the truck, he's about to kill the kids, and he signs to the daughter who thinks that her father hates her.
Yeah.
He signs to her, I love you, I've always loved you. This really intense thing.
Oh, because she's always harbored that, because that's what happens, is like...
The first kid,
the very first
boy.
Scene we see is, yeah, like they're basically ransacking a grocery store, getting whatever they can to survive, and the kid finds a little airplane thing, or like a little spaceship. That potentially makes noise. And the dad's like, just don't do that. He does the motion that means like it makes music. Don't
takes the batteries out. Puts it off to the side.
And then as they're walking out the door, the little girl's like, you know what? You can have the aircraft. Mm. But doesn't think that the kid's going to be like, I'm taking the batteries too. And the kid, of course, puts the batteries in the thing, triggers it, gets split in half by an alien. Mm. So
she's always worried that the dad blames her for this death.
And yeah, she harbors his guilt because she's like, I'm the one that gave him... She didn't give him the batteries, but she gave him the thing. And then the kid put the batteries in and died. And then the dad is just... kind of constantly been like, I mean, I'm sure in the back of mind he didn't blame the girl. He's just like, if anything, this is my fault for not paying a little better attention, not being more aware of what had happened. And, like, literally grabbing the two by the fucking throats and getting them out of the fucking building and be like, don't take this toy, don't do that. This is going to kill all of us. And composure on their part to, frankly and sadly, watch it have to happen. Mm. Not try to intervene or interject or to...
Well, you're talking about that. Dad was running to him trying to save him.
He's trying to, like, get the kid away from him. But once it happened, like, you don't see him being, like, with a baseball bat and, like, get away from him, alien. He's just sort of, like, has to sit there and watch... And the whole family has to sit there and watch him.
And the mother even blames herself. Like, there's the scene, yeah. Like, right after she gives birth, she's lying there and starts talking. It's a boy. And then immediately starts talking about the first kid that... The kid that died. He's like, my hands were free. I could have carried him. And...
Yeah, that's true.
My friend that laughed at the kid dying at that point also was, she told us afterwards, but she was going through her head, like, yeah, you could have, bitch. Like, things like that.
Mm.
But then the scene comes where Krasinski dies, saving her kids, saving his kids and everything. And we're walking out of the theater. She's fucking crying about this. So she goes through this big emotional roller coaster through this movie.
Is she manic?
Hilarious to watch. She's an odd one, but she's cool. She's an odd one. Yeah. But it's just really good. I really liked everything about that movie.
By the way, you want to know the very last scene that we see in this movie?
That was the most cliche, cheesy thing in the entire thing.
It's her loading up a shotgun.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Ready to pull
now they're ready to fight back?
Major spoiler. Sorry if you plan on watching this movie. That's fine. We've butchered it for you at this point. But
It's a brisk movie. If anything, I think that shotgun scene, we should have had 20 more minutes of movie after that.
I feel like
we should have seen
it. We should have gotten something. That would have been epic.
Even if everybody dies, who cares? At least they fought.
Great. No, the last... they figure out... Yeah. The alien's weakness, and that's high-pitched frequency. Which, of course, how did they not figure that shit out? I mean, they hear everything. Let's make a really loud noise that kills them. I mean, come on. And they do this thing because the daughter is deaf, so she has this, like, hearing aid thing, and it creates a frequency because they're trying to make one strong enough for her, and they can't.
Oh, that's that is a moment in the movie that is crucial, where after her father's death, I think it is,
yeah.
She goes into the room she's forbidden to enter. Probably because in her own mind she thinks, I can't go into this room because I'll get us all killed. You know, but in reality, it's a room in which he's been tinkering and collecting parts and pieces to make her a hearing aid that will work for her. And that's been, like, his entire life, aside from, you know, creating babies with his wife.
The only thing growing a fantastic beard that I wish I could.
And doing a million push-ups. John Krasinski is attractive, everybody. I mean, we can all admit, even though no matter how straight you are, you would fuck this guy. At any rate, yeah, he's actually devoted his life to try to basically create a hearing aid for his daughter, who is deaf, which is a very noble thing for him to be doing with his time.
Another emotional thing, like, oh, daddy does love me.
Yeah, exactly.
And then he smashes it in front of her.
Oh, wouldn't that be something? If he puts in her ear and he's like, I never loved you.
That's so good. It was your fault. Smash.
Oh, wouldn't that be mean?
So she uses the hearing aid in order to, like, cause great pain for the monster.
Yeah.
And he, like, collapses, and he gets up and it's about to kill him, and the mom shoots a shotgun and blows it off. And then in, like, all these security cameras, you see three of them coming across the field, coming towards them. And then it's just, she looks at the daughter,
and the daughter
looks at her son holding the baby, and she's like, yeah, cocks the shotgun, credits roll. And it's just the...
I don't even think the runtime of this movie is a full 90 minutes. Mm. So that part is actually... We got, I think, as moviegoers, we kind of got cheated out of that.
Yeah.
Like, whether or not they live or die, we could have seen...
It's one of those endings where you decide. It's kind of like one of those kind of things.
And if they make a sequel, then I will truly feel cheated. As long as
the sequel picks up immediately right there.
It's like a 20-minute short.
It better. No, it's just like she's just churning a spit roast or something that's got one of those alien monsters on it. And it's like, oh man, nobody say shit about this. All right. No, like,
How stupid do you think they get here to, like, come up with some sort of premise, like, the aliens exhale helium, so now, like, they don't talk again, but they all sound like chipmunks? Because our atmosphere has been...
Or maybe... Fart
helium.
You know, like, in Independence Day, when they're like, get on the horn, we know how to bring these things down, and yeah. They're just like, we know the solution, and they get on the microphone, and they're just like, I can't say anything. I can't make noise. No, and, like, we did this really, like, funny, like, breakdown of the plot, like a plot synopsis.
Right.
We should talk about like the stuff that go into it. Like the sound design is actually really impressive.
Really, really good.
How they use silence is super impressive in the way that it draws you into the film. I know I am super, like, as much as I love horror and I love suspense, I get suckered into jump scares as well as anybody. Like, I hop when the slightest thing happens.
And this movie loves jump scares. And like, it does some of the weirdest ones, too.
Yeah.
Like, the only scary aspect of this movie is the jump scares. Because you never know when something's just going to pop or something like that.
But, because it's so quiet.
They do it about fucking everything.
Yeah.
Dad's arm reaches out and grabs the kid. Old man stands up in the middle of the woods. Monster's about to chop your head off. Like, they do it about everything.
A child is in the frame who's closely examining an object, and it's so tightly structured that that's all you see. And then, of course, a hand comes in to wrench him away, and it scares you because you're like, oh my god, I was that little child looking at this object. That's
just
good. That's good. That's really good filmmaking. That's, you know, good construction of how to scare an audience with something. And those moments, like, think about when he's in the waterfall screaming, like, that feels good as an audience member, to be like, I can relax and eat a popcorn and take a swig of fucking Coke here. Like, this is nice. Like, and by the way, there was maybe like five other people in the theater when I went to see it that weren't me and my crew. So anytime anyone did anything, you heard it. It was like, because the movie
so is, I was like, better than a package of Skittles.
don't be that guy. Don't be that guy. That
not for this movie.
Opens
just
a pack
don't
of
do it.
Twizzlers in the middle of
crack
the
a beer. Just no, don't be that guy.
It would be a weird movie to see in a crowd of people that were trying. If you either want to be.
Somebody's got a bag of Doritos. Crunch.
You either want an empty theater or a near empty theater where everyone is being respectful of the movie, or you want a packed theater where no one is being respectful to this movie.
Hmm.
If it's a packed theater and everyone's trying to be quiet, but then you just hear like a squeaker of a fart come from
somewhere, it's going to ruin the movie. Right?
But if everyone's just like, oh shit, you're a dumb bitch, I'll do that. It's like, you already got two kids. It's like, no, like that would be fun. I think it's a very weird experience where it's one of those movies where you got to have the right vibe. I feel like it could be ruined by a crowd in the wrong circumstances. But yeah, like it's a beautiful film. They do some cheesy plot stuff, not gonna lie. Some cheesy plot shit happens to just kind of create a story.
But it works, because you kind of have to do some cheesy shit in this kind of thing. Like, there's no dialogue.
Yeah, and it's very lived in. You kind of, all of the surroundings feel like that they have been constructed by a family that's been doing this for, again, 400 and something days.
Yeah.
So, really cool. If they make a sequel, I'd be interested in seeing it, but.
I mean, this kind of movie doesn't really get sequels.
Yeah.
No.
The director killed himself in it, so hey, John Krasinski directed it.
Oh.
So
I didn't know he directed it, too. Wow, good job.
Yeah.
Throws a beard, does my sit-ups.
This is kind of his project, as I
understand. Die Saving Kids and directed the death. Wow, well done, man.
Yeah, and banged Emily Blunt.
Banged Emily
Blunt. Well done.
Yeah, good for
him. I mean, that alone is a feat.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That beard is mostly her facial hair. Good night, everyone. Tip your waitresses.
Good. All right. You guys want to do 10 minutes on comic books for a second here?
I think I can.
Yeah,
I can do 10 minutes.
I can do 10 minutes.
Let's hear it.
I'll give you 10.
Okay. So I've been
reading Archie comics.
Oh, yeah? How's it?
I'm fucking with you.
I'm pretty sure Archie's dead.
There's a Scooby-Doo zombie series, and they killed Fred.
I'll get the fuck out of here.
They just killed Fred.
Are you serious?
I was reading about it, and I was like, this actually looks kind of funny. Because it is like a hardcore zombie adventure thing.
Yeah.
And it's all very modern and adult and violent.
I'm happy they killed Fred. That makes me his least favorite.
No, but if all of the characters are re-envisioned, and Fred is sort of the kind of Cyclops, I guess you would say. He's the macho team leader that kind of gets everybody on point and seems to be doing his job well.
Hmm.
And then he dies.
Hmm. How sad. Does he still wear the ascot?
No, it becomes a kafaya, and he wears it over his face like he's a fucking Iraqi soldier or something. You were saying?
Comic books. So I've been getting back into a lot of the... I'm moving chronologically. I started, of course, in 1965 with the X-Men, and just kind of been moving through, and now I'm up to 1990. I'm actually in September of 1990.
But, and you're muscling through this shit.
Yeah, I really am. Well, you know, there's a bit of a dark period between 1969 and 1975.
Oh, and Chris Claremont takes over?
Chris Claremont takes over in 1975, and actually he's the writer up until 1991, so it was this really prolific period. And I think he's been at his best from 86 up to 1990 here. And there are five ongoing X-Men books at this point. You have, of course, Uncanny X-Men, which is the series that starts in 1965 with the original five, and then they have the team change over in 1975, and that's still going. And there's like some really cool stuff happening in that book, because he's gotten to a point where, you know, you start to get a lot of like the major events. We've talked about Mutant Massacre, Fall of Mutants, Inferno, and pretty much what happens is after Fall of Mutants, the X-Men, like the core X-Men team, Storm, Wolverine, Colossus, they have to basically act. The world believes they're dead and they have to continue that facade in order to track down the Marauders, who are the perpetrators of the Mutant Massacre, and they're out just to try to take out as many other mutants as they can. So like, okay, well, we have to track these people down. It's going to be easier if they're not looking for us. If the world thinks we're dead, they think we're dead, they're not looking for us. So they have this headquarters in Australia, and basically there's this really great storyline where you remember from the animated series, like the cyborg people, like the guy who's lower half of his body's a tank. Lady Deathstrike hangs out with them as well.
I don't remember them.
They're the Reavers. They're also in the Logan movie. Like have like cyborg people.
Vaguely, Logan. Okay.
So they become a big nemesis of the X-Men as well. They attack Moira MacTaggert and Banshee on Muir Island, and they also attack the
X-Men. Are they okay?
They're okay, yes.
They're Irish. I hope they're okay.
They're okay. Something fucked up is going on there, though, because Legion is now on the loose. Legion kind of bails them out. Mm-hmm. But I haven't got to the conclusion of that story arc yet. So the
Emerald Isles, man. Mm-hmm. You gotta worry.
So the Reavers also attack the X-Men in their Australian hideout, which used to be a Reaver hideout, which is why they knew they were there.
And they're killed by spiders. Just the natural natural wildlife of Australia.
Everything's going to kill you in Australia.
Yeah.
So
if you can survive in Australia, then...
And it's this really great story, because what Chris Claremont is doing throughout 89 and 90 is he's basically like cleaning house again. He removes Storm from the picture of the X-Men, thinks she's dead. He also does the same thing with Rogue. She is presumed dead, but they don't find a body for either one of them, so it's not going to be
even with a body, you can't be sure they're
dead. Exactly, but he's not being cheap about this. He's not actually like killing them, having a funeral. It's just they're missing presumed dead.
Question. Because of the Infinity War, Rogue now has me super intrigued because of her origins.
Yeah.
Is there a time where you see Rogue pre-Miss Marvel?
Yes.
So is this after Miss Marvel?
Yes. She's just trailer trash.
Right. So when Rogue shows up in X-Men comics, you see her once, maybe twice, before she has the Ms. Marvel powers.
When
did
you see it happening? Or is it
not
you just hear about it? She just shows up one day and is like, hey, I can fly, I can punch through this building in your space.
Hold that thought. In X-Men, no. When she becomes a primary member of that comic book series, when she joins the team, she's got the powers. Because she's a villain in Avengers. And it's in an Avengers annual book, which is... just like a bigger issue.
Collection or whatever.
She does the thing where she holds on for too long and absorbs her power in her consciousness. And she goes around and then also tries to absorb powers of other Avengers and goes on this big tirade where she takes out a lot of Avengers. And then like all the other powers fade off, but the Carol Danvers powers stick with her. And she goes to Charles Xavier for help. And that's when she joins up with the X-Men book. So she leaves Mystique and the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. But the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants is not a villain group.
But they have evil in their
name. Even most, they're not associated with the X-Men. They're a villain group more closely associated in the early days with the Avengers. Which, was surprising to me as well. But, so what Chris Claremont is doing in this run from like 89 up to 90 is he's cleaning house. Storm and Rogue get taken off the table. Havoc gets it. Well, Havoc gets taken. But pretty much when the Reavers come in and attack this base, it's his way of removing everyone else off the table. He's doing a reset here. So Psylocke, the four remaining X-Men, because Wolverine's fucked off and gone and done his own thing. And at this time, all of the comic book series have a continuity. So Wolverine, in 1988, got his own solo series. And then his role in the X-Men starts to fade off because he's off having his own fucking adventures. But, and end up totally abandoning the team. So,
I never really liked Wolverine.
He's over.
Like, calm down. He's got claws and he can't die.
Wolverine's a fucking asshole. So, he's been removed from the picture. So, the four remaining X-Men are Psylocke, who's leading the team at the time, British Psylocke, a Dazzler, Colossus, and Havoc. And what they do is they have like this magic alien device that they got in during the Fall of Mutants, where they can basically like give themselves a reset. They can use it. It wipes out all their memories of ever being an X-Men and gives them a different life in a different place. And they're under attack from the Reavers. This is their only way out. So they're like, fuck it. We're about to die. Reset button. And so they vanish. The only X-Men left is Wolverine, who then decides to show up. And the Reavers are the only ones there left of the base. They're like, what are you guys doing here? We're here to fucking kill you. And they crucify him.
Oh, dear God.
Yeah, they have him, like, nailed to a wooden X out in the sun. And he keeps on frying in the sun. But, of course, because of the healing factor. And they fucking use him for target practice. They're just shooting at him whenever he resurrects himself. And they're doing this to him over and over again. And, of course, like we talked about before, Jubilee was camping out with the X-Men. No one knew she was there because she was so insignificant. And she's the one who ends up getting him down.
She's sitting there in the back just eating Doritos, like, just mix in with them.
She's the one person in the quiet theater with a bag of chips. But look, she gets him down, and he's like, who are you? And she tells him, and he forgets immediately because she's Jubilee. Who cares? And then you, like, and from that point, like, after he gets rescued, then you start to get the X-Men reintroduced in these new situations. And we talked about before, this is where Psylocke
gets biased. Does he address her as, like, Ugly Dazzler?
No, he does not.
No.
But what Chris Cronin is doing this reset with these characters. So what he's done with Wolverine is basically done a hard reset on his healing factor. Like, he was hurt so badly that now his healing factor has been slowed way down. So he's not able to lean on that anymore. Psylocke does the whole body swap thing, and through a few issues of Uncanny X-Men,
and gets even more sexy.
Indeed. So Psylocke, Wolverine, and Jubilee are all hanging out. Dazzler shows up.
How do those three purple rings around her thigh contribute in a fight, is what I'm wondering. Because I like that we're seeing all that leg.
Not at all. They're purely for eye candy.
Who is Dazzler?
Okay, so Dazzler,
she's a pop star, right?
She's a character that they introduced in the 70s.
She's
right,
like,
around
from
the Phoenix
ABBA
saga
or something.
Right. She is a pop singer who's also a mutant. She converts sound into light and can, like, make those light like lasers. So
she's a lot like Jubilee, who creates fireworks.
Right.
Pyrotechnics.
Except her pyrotechnics don't really do much harm, whereas Dazzler can do things like blind you or shoot you with a fucking laser. So she's actually a pretty powerful mutant who turns out later is also immortal. She can't die either because she can also turn herself into light. They've never really fully explained it. It's just kind of one of those things like, don't worry
so
about
rather
it.
Rather than taking the suicide pill or the escape pill, she could have just basically
stood
there and just like lit everybody up like a fucking, you know, Christmas tree if she wanted.
She's not a very proficient fighter at that point. So Dazzler shows up, she's in L.A. and
oh, and Colossus is not a proficient fighter? Why the fuck? Why is he running?
They were severely outgunned at that point. They were, and also Chris Claremont does this thing where every so often he's like, blow it all up, depower everyone as much as possible, scatter them, and we'll rebuild from there. And then he starts building towards something new. Which is great, because now The primary device of removing people from the landscape is, just kill them off for a little while. Whereas he does this other thing, he's like, I'm not going to kill them, I'm going to drastically change their situation. So Storm shows back up, except she's been de-aged. And actually just got to the point where Gambit shows up for the first time, and it's when Storm is robbing someone, and he's there robbing them too. And they're like, oh, we're both robbing this guy, he's onto us, oh shit, it's the Shadow King, let's get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
So that's where I left off with that series. But it's been really interesting to see like all of these resets for these characters. Like Colossus is just this painter guy who's...
He's an art history teacher? Or is it just history teacher?
At this point, he's not teaching. Oh. Okay. He's living in New York and he is an artist and he is making money doing his art. And he's rediscovered his powers. He hasn't regained his memories yet, but he knows that he's a mutant with these powers. And he met up with X-Factor, which is another ongoing series at this point. And
this is with or without Deadpool?
No Deadpool.
Is it X-Factor or am I thinking X-Force?
You're thinking X-Force.
Okay.
We'll get to that in a second. But
God.
there's five going on right now. Uncanny X-Men.
X-Factor seems like America's Got Talent, except with mutants.
X-Factor is a book that I've brought up before. It's ongoing now. That's the original five back together. This is where they resurrected Jean Grey. And getting back to your point about Dazzler, Dazzler was supposed to replace Jean Grey when Chris Claremont killed her off in Dark Phoenix Saga. But the character didn't really take off, so she kind of got benched. Which is for the best, because she's a pretty solid character, but she's not great. But then also brought in the Jean Grey clone, which lead to things like the Inferno event. She becomes this villain.
Was there not a person that'd be like Chris Claremont just say no? No, this is too much.
No. And actually, a lot of the stuff he does is because they...
Someone's like, maybe we should stop, and he's like, and here's what else we're gonna do.
Wait till we get to Excalibur, because so you get the original five back together, and actually, this is something that Chris Claremont didn't want to do. He's like, well, no, I killed Jean Grey off. It was a really important moment. I don't want to resurrect her, and they're like, you have to. Mm-hmm. Which does
we've made all of this merchandise,
right? So, but does lead to
the flamethrower.
It leads to a lot of really great stories. It's for the best that she got resurrected, because without that, you don't get characters like Cable, and you don't get events like Inferno, and you don't get characters like Madeline Pryor going evil. You don't get storylines with her becoming the Phoenix again. Like none of that actually happens. So it's for the best that she got resurrected, but. X-Factor, it has been hit and miss, mostly good, because you get storylines like Angel becoming Archangel, Beast going all blue again because he was blue, and then at the beginning of X-Factor, they gave him like his human look back. And then
he blew himself.
And then I guess people like didn't like him as the human. They wanted the blue Beast back, so they made him blue again. Iceman is a really important character. It's really fun to see that the core group of five, and them doing things like fighting Apocalypse. They went off planet for a little bit, and they got mixed up with some events around like the Celestials. That story wasn't great. The writer of that series, Louise Simonson, it can be a little bit up her own ass at times. She's very much reminds me of like a 70s comic book writer where she used a lot of words, a lot of exposition. Mm-hmm. Where if she just kept it short and snappy, it'd be a lot more pleasant read. But once they had to go off planet because there was an event going on and they needed to remove these powerful characters from the scene. So X-Factor go off planet. They bring them back and now things have picked up back up again because now there's like this occult group who are after Archangel and want to absorb him into their occult group. So that's been kind of fun.
Huh.
And there's this storyline where Banshee and Forge have left Muir Island because like they're on to like something weird going on there with Legion. So like, well, they notice like in a magazine a picture of Dazzler, like, oh shit, Dazzler's alive. Maybe the other X-Men are alive. And then they run into Colossus in New York with X-Factor, like, oh shit, Colossus, you're alive too. So they're kind of trying to round up the X-Men who are presumed dead. Wolverine, Storm, Rogue, all them. So they go down into the Morlock tunnels, and there's this Morlock down there, Mask, and he can morph people's bodies to his will. He's a really grotesque character, but Jean was with him at the time, and he gave her tentacle arms, which was really gross and disturbing, and affected her telekinesis because she wasn't able to use hands because she doesn't have any. And he also did that thing, like, remember that part in The Matrix where Keanu Reeves gets his mouth covered up?
Yeah.
He did that to Banshee. Ooh. So Banshee was only able to use his screaming powers. There's a few issues that went on. It was a really interesting storyline. X-Factor's been good. The other one that's going on is...
That's kind of cool, though. That means that his basically inherent power is to neutralize any threat that anybody could have based on the properties of their body.
Right, right. Like he's a really dick character. Like he's just a fucking mean dude. Mm-hmm. He's not really like a villain. He doesn't go up to the surface and cause havoc. But if people come down to the moral octagon, he's like, well, I guess you're my lump of clay now, because. Fucking morph into something hideous.
Aha, now you have a penis on your forehead.
Exactly.
Like, what? Where'd my penis go? Where'd my forehead penis go? That was how I saw into the future.
New Mutants. New Mutants is the third series that is ongoing, and this one's actually getting close to ending. New Mutants ends in 1991 and becomes X-Force, which is one you're thinking of. And Deadpool joins up with New Mutants, which turns into X-Force, in issue 98. There's only 100 issues. And what this was, New Mutants started out as like the new generation of mutants. And they're never supposed to be a superhero team, but Professor X left the planet. He went off with the Shi'ar. Magneto became the leader, trying to take over for Charles Xavier. Realized that I'm a villain. I can't leave these students for shit. So he disappeared. So the New Mutants had been running around having their own little adventures by themselves.
Oh, great. It's Camp Nowhere all over again.
It was Camp Nowhere. They actually joined up with X-Factor for a little bit, but then, right at the beginning of 1990, Cable gets introduced. And it's this really strange introduction because I don't know if they knew what they were going to do with this character going forward. He's just kind of like this ex-military special operatives guy. They haven't even established he's a mutant at this point. And he's just got this metal arm. He's just a dude with a metal arm who's really good at beating people up.
Yeah.
And he's trying to take down this group called the Mutant Liberation Front, who is this terrorist organization that's trying to take down the government because they oppress mutants. And they do so by...
Sounds like the ALF.
Yeah.
The animal, like a legitimate group called the Animal Liberation Front.
Right.
That did the same. They were the ones that threw blood on people wearing fur coats like at award shows and shit.
Yeah. So, the New Mutants, they are leaderless. Danny Moonstar left the New Mutants team. She stayed on Asgard because she's a Valkyrie and decided to stay there. And fucking Cannonball can't lead a team for shit, so they needed someone to lead. So, Cable. So, they're now working with Cable to take down the Mutant Liberation Front. And at this point, characters are going to be leaving and they're going to reform the team into X-Force. And that's where X-Force is going to pick up, where you see characters like Domino come around in Deadpool. I think that Richter and Boom Boom will stick around.
Boom Boom.
And Wolfsbane.
Yeah.
Now, Boom Boom, she makes bombs. She's an annoying character. She's annoying because she makes these bombs, and in the dialogue boxes always has to count down to when they're going to explode. Like,
oh, so they have these kinds of little bubbles of
right, timers. Right. 3, 2, 1. Boo, and you know, just
aren't comics the perfect medium to establish time?
Yeah, I think Boom Boom was in that show,
Evolution.
Yeah, she was in Evolution.
She was.
I wish that show kept going. Actually, it wasn't that bad.
Yeah, it was all right. It was a fun little adaptation.
They ended like right in the middle of the apocalypse fight. Like,
oh, did they?
Yeah, it was like that didn't even resolve. Like one of the last episodes, like Xavier becomes a horseman and he's like fighting around with like the psychic spectral scythe or something like that. I don't even know what he was doing.
This is gonna be a tangent. Can I bring this up real quick? So they're back to the NBA. So Adam Silver is the commissioner of the NBA, right? I don't know if you've seen him. He's a very, very, he's a tall guy, he's bald, just looks very professional. But then in one of the forums I go to, somebody made this great comment where people were speculating on what was going to happen to LeBron after the season. And then one of them just creates this little snippet of a story that's beautiful by using text. And he's like, Adam Silver sits in the boardroom, his chair rolls around. He begins slapping the iPad in front of him with his hands. And he's like, LeBron, Los Angeles, big market, money go boom, boom. This is his dream fantasy. Money go boom boom.
Nice.
Sorry, that relates to nothing. What are we talking about?
But I don't really have too much.
X-Men Evolution. I watched X-Men Evolution. That was a good show.
It was a good show.
I liked it.
New Mutants, nothing else too exciting going on. The team is sort of in flux, and they're definitely prepping for it to become something else. Louise Simonson, who is current author of X-Factor, was writing New Mutants, and it has now been passed off to a guy whose name I don't know, who's then going to take it into X-Force. There's also the Wolverine solo series, which is ongoing at this point, and that'll go up until, I believe, 2003.
He's in Canada trying to get taller.
He's in a fictional Southeast Asia island called Mandrapur, and he's there being all, like, noir and shit. And
he's a gumshoe detective.
Yeah, I do not like this book. I don't like this series.
Does he at least say bub occasionally?
He does say bub quite a bit.
How are his sideburns?
Full, very full.
Good.
Majestic.
But like the entire solo series is like, oh, look how cool Wolverine is. Don't you love Wolverine? He's got knives coming out of his hands, and he's harsh, and he tells it like it is, and he's mean, and he'll kill people. He don't give a fuck. The adventures that he has, he's so blasé about everything. Everything that he encounters, like, I've seen this all before, and I'm too good to deal with all of it.
Doesn't he need... It's hard to make a series out of the wild card, though. He's supposed to be the wild card, isn't he? I always thought he was the guy you couldn't predict.
He's the guy who you send to do the dirty
work. He's the hothead.
He's the guy who does not have that moral center. Who, like, you know, when you have to do something that's less than ethical, you send Wolverine to do it because he'll do whatever needs to be done.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's a school full of bunnies. We need you to blow it up.
Right. And like, okay, I'll do what I gotta do.
That was hauntingly accurate impersonation, by the way.
Thank you. I've been
working
well
done.
On it.
Hugh Jackman.
We've been talking for like 3 hours. So, no, I'd And I continue to read this Wolverine solo series. I'm actually a little bit behind a few issues within where I am up to date with the rest of them, because I keep expecting it to tie in, because all these other titles tie in together, especially New Mutants, X-Factor, and Uncanny X-Men. Those three, like, they intersect quite a bit. But Wolverine, like, he'll be in Uncanny X-Men with Psylocke and Jubilee, and then in his solo series, he'll just be running around Southeast Asia in a stupid fucking fedora hat and eye patch. Like
he has an eye patch?
Oh, yeah. Well, because...
This sounds horrible.
Because his healing power hasn't gone back yet.
Oh. No. Because this is before he got crucified. Like, this this solo series started before they got attacked in Australia.
Okay.
So he wears the eye patch because at the time, the world still presumes them dead. But he wants to go and fucking live
that's
in
his disguise?
So that's his disguise! And it gets revealed like in issue 20 because there's some other Marvel characters like Spider-Woman is in Mandrapur with her girlfriend, and they're not girlfriends at the time, but we know what's going on there.
Yeah.
Because it's 1989 and you can't say it, but you know what's going on there. And it gets revealed in like issue 20 because he like puts on like the brown and gold costume. I think it's the first time that costume is seen, and he's like gonna be Wolverine again. And like Spider-Woman says, oh, so you're finally like just gonna be open about who you are. And like, oh, you knew it was me the whole time? Yes, I fucking knew it was you the whole time. You're disguised as an eye patch. Just fucking acts like everyone else is an idiot, and he's the one like,
you keep saying bub, you have a cigar in your hand.
That bar you just exited has 12 dead people in it. I mean,
you are 4'8" tall. We know exactly who you are.
Yeah, and like throughout like the rest of the series, like
Tom Cruise of X-Men,
all of the other like major characters in the solo series are like, oh yeah, I knew it was you. Like, he's the only one who thinks he's fooling anybody.
Yeah.
Anyway, but the fifth one, the last one that's ongoing currently is Excalibur. Do you guys know anything about Excalibur?
It's a sword used by King Arthur.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And he eventually throws it into a lake.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not the time to have it now.
I meant the comic book series.
Oh, I have no idea.
Yeah. So Excalibur is sometimes the butt of a joke. Because what Excalibur is a team, and they're based in Britain. And Excalibur has an X in the name and they're mutants, so it's... I guess
oh, isn't one of the guys, like, literally wearing a British... The Union Jack or whatever, like, the British flag?
Captain Britain. Captain Britain is sort of the...
Who we don't need.
He's a lot like...
I control all of India.
That's my power. I oppress people. So, and he's actually, like, I really like this Excalibur series. It's actually surprisingly good. And I'll tell you why in a minute. But Captain Britain, just to address this, he's a lot like a Captain America who can fly, right? He has a lot of the same power set, except he's not a super soldier, he's a mutant.
Yeah, except he represents imperialism instead of freedom.
Yes, exactly, yes. So he's also Psylocke's older brother. They are siblings.
Oh, but nobody ever turned him Asian.
Nope.
Wouldn't that be fucked up if they did, though? And everyone would be like, you can't be Captain Britain and be Asian.
They should make him Canadian. That would show him.
Hey, same color palette, right?
Yeah.
It'd be okay.
They all put the queen on the money. It's all the same. So he's actually kind of, I like him more than I thought I would, because he's supposed to be the team leader, but he's kind of a deadbeat. Like, he's never around when the team needs him. He doesn't really feel like leading the team. Nightcrawler is more of a leader than he is, which makes sense because he has team leader experience. Nightcrawler led the X-Men for a little bit in the 80s. But Nightcrawler's on the team, so is Kitty Pryde and Rachel Summers, who is the daughter of Scott Summers and Jean Grey from the Days of Future Past storyline. So they bring these...
What's her powers?
Telekinetic. And she also possesses the Phoenix Force.
That's boring.
In what way?
Just keep going.
So,
which one's from Scotland?
Also, there's a shapeshifter in the group. Her name is Megan. She doesn't have a code name.
Where's she from? So, what? Nightcrawler, Captain Brigand, and Megan. It's
like, Megan. Shadow Cat.
She's like, Megan is my name, but what's her real name? Sarah.
But I mean, she's a fun character, too, because she's very much like... She didn't grow up around other people, so she's a very naive character. And her and...
She was raised by wolves? Like, what do you mean?
Essentially, yeah. But she draws her shape-shifting powers from, like, the planets. And there's an issue, like, where she's ready to take on, like, Galactus. Like, she can be very powerful. She wouldn't win, but she could, like, stand toe-to-toe with him. But in doing so, she would drain all of the life from the planet to do it.
Oh, God.
So, yeah. But... So you have these five, and three of them, of course, from X-Men books. Kitty, Pryde, and Nightcrawler were in the events of Mutant Massacre. They got severely injured. That's when they went to Muir Island and stayed in Ireland and Britain. And when the X-Men, quote-unquote, died, when the world presumed they were dead, they decided to form their own team and remain in England. And so they have no idea that the X-Men are actually still alive for this whole thing. X-Factor knows, the New Mutants... don't know. I think only X-Factor is the only other group that's aware that the X-Men are alive. But what Excalibur is, as you were talking earlier about Chris Claremont really going off the rails.
Yeah.
Excalibur is Chris Claremont just doing whatever the fuck he feels like. Because
maybe that's how they controlled him and isolated him. They're just like, we need five series from you, buddy. Fifth one's yours. Yeah. It's a triple X fuck force. Go to town. Whatever you want to make out of this thing.
There's, because they do a lot of things like really wacky characters and scenarios. They go reality jumping. Excalibur for about a year and a half is a lot like the show Sliders. Yeah. Except if everyone in Sliders had superpowers. Nice. And fucking, like, Jerry O'Connell had, like, a Firebird, and John Rhys-Davies could walk through walls.
Oh, this sounds like a dream.
He already walks on water, we know.
I know.
It has, like, these really fun, like, nods to other, like, nerdy sci-fi stuff that you can tell Chris Claremont is really into. Like, there is, before they go reality hunting, they meet up with this group of British secret spies.
Uh-huh.
And they call themselves the Weird Happenings Organization, and they abbreviate it WHO. And
like Doctor Who.
Yeah, totally. Like, this is totally a Doctor Who reference. And the leader of the group is a Commander Stewart, which is a reference to, like, the Doctor's BFF, like from the third Doctor, I believe it was, the Lethbridge Stewart. And then they go reality hunting or reality hopping, and they end up in this, like, really bureaucratic reality, and you could, like, they have to, like, stand in all these lines. It's a really fucking exciting issue. But, like, in one of the panels, there's just, like, a Dalek, so, like, sitting there, like, queuing with them in the bureaucratic way. And there's body swapping and, like, body dysmorphia. There's this character, and I don't... There's this pair of characters, and I don't know what their function is yet, but one is Captain Britain's brother, and he has reality warping powers. He can basically do whatever he fucking feels like to people. And there's a storyline where there's this British lady, and she is they're sort of the kingpin of the British underworld. And the reality warping brother of Psylocke and Captain Britain has this lackey with him who's this investment banker, and he got tangled up all into this because he was just trying to usurp this other character in this brokerage firm. This is all like fucking batshit insane. And what they do is they kill off like him, the investment banker, and the reality warping friends kill off this kingpin of the British underworld lady. And the investment banker is like, well, what do we do now? Like, you wanted to infiltrate the underworld, but you just killed their leader. And he's like, well, I can warp reality. You're her now. So now he goes back, like, this investment banker goes back and forth between this female British kingpin and this investment banker who's also trying to, like, fucking broker deals and shit.
God. Wow, he really thought this one through.
Excalibur, and they time jump, not the characters, but like the writers. Like, this story takes place before we told you all these other things. Like, what the fuck? And sometimes they don't even tell you. Like, I read an issue, like, well, when they were reality hopping, Kitty Pryde got sent back to their proper reality, Earth 616. They didn't know she got sent back there. They just think she's missing now somewhere, sliding around universes. Even though now they're all back to Earth 616, they just aren't aware. Nobody fucking owns a cell phone. It's 1990. So they can't just like text each other and say, hey, I'm here too now. So
hey, where you at?
Kitty Pryde is off with this other character. The other four are back and back in their headquarters, which is a lighthouse, because of course it fucking is. And I forgot where I was going with this. Stand by. So... they jump in time from issue to issue. So there was an issue just after they all got back to get, like, they all got back into the same reality, but they're not aware of where each other are. And there's an issue just after that where they were all back together and they didn't address that, hey, now we all know each other are here. Mm. And the next issue after that was like, no, they don't know that they're all in the same reality now. Oof. So, the in-between issue was clearly a flashback story, and they never fucking said anything. It was just like, don't worry about it. This is a thing that happened. Figure it out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's Chris Claremont just being able to do whatever the fuck he damn well pleases.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that seems like he had the run of the show.
Yeah.
They let him do it.
He had the cachet.
He has five successful issues running simultaneously.
I don't know what the history is behind it, but he's eventually going to run out of that cachet, because right at 1991, there's going to be a big shift, and the teams are going to change up, and the X-Men are going to all merge back together. New Mutants is going to end. So yeah. It's been fun.
Yeah.
But I think that's enough.
Oof. We've been at it for a while.
Yeah. All right. Till next time.
So long.
Later.